Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Ostrom here, Iowa Insider, Indianapolis Star. It is a double-barreled Mind Your Banners Monday. You probably won't listen to this till Tuesday because it's closing in on 9 o'clock Eastern when we're recording this. This is a second Mind Your Banners for November 28th, 2022. We did one this afternoon with Dustin. We dedicated that, you know, wholly and completely to kind of asking the question, the big questions around IU football and where IU might go from here. And I wanted to separate that because I also wanted to bring in some heavy hitters for a podcast about the heavy hitting game, the primetime game in Bloomington on Wednesday night. And there are two hitters. I can think of two hitters no heavier than Tyler Tackman and the venerable Chronic Hoosier. Tyler, we'll start with you. This matchup has undoubtedly lost a little bit of shine. You know, when it was announced, we knew North Carolina was likely to be preseason top five, if not preseason number one. They went out to Portland and, you know, kind of did what I think people suspected they might do after an underwhelming start to the season, a couple ugly ish wins at home. They dodged Portland, who actually gave everybody a game out there. They beat Villanova. They took Michigan State down to the wire. But they dodged Portland in their first game out in the Nike Invitational there. But then they lost 70-65 to Iowa State, and then they played what was at very least a four overtime game. I don't know that I would call it a thrilling four overtime game based on what I saw against Alabama. They lost that 103-101. I believe they dropped down to, it was at 18th in the AP poll today. I haven't seen the coaches poll. That's what we normally cite because it's USA Today. It's they got exposed a little bit in Portland, and we wondered, I think, if they would, again, based on some underwhelming early season results. I think in particular a 6-point home win to Gardner Webb. But they, you know, the heels went out there, and listen, the teams that they lost to aren't bad teams and they didn't get blown out. But they certainly didn't look like the number one overall team in the country.
Yeah, I think North Carolina still has the potential to win a national championship. I just think that the gap between where they need to be and where they are right now is just wider than people, and especially North Carolina fans, had hoped. I think they have a lot more growth that they need to do to get to that place where they did at the end of the season, last year. And I said this before, and just kind of regarding this matchup, I feel like the perception of this game has shifted. Whereas maybe before the season, you're looking at this as a toss up, you know, Indiana's going to have to play really well to win. It's a game you'd probably like Indiana to win. But just given the circumstances, North Carolina playing 3 games in 4 days in Portland, having that last one be a quadruple overtime, them going 1-2, struggling a lot. To me, this just feels like a game Indiana needs to have. You know, they have the Assembly Hall crowd behind them. And we've seen flashes of how good this Indiana team can be, winning at Xavier. I just feel like the way that North Carolina is kind of treading water right now, Indiana just needs to kind of come out and take care of business. And to me, it feels like it would be a letdown if they don't come out and win. And I would be surprised if North Carolina wins the game. I really would at this point. That's not to say that they can't win. I just think, given everything that we've kind of talked about, that Indiana is in a really good spot. And I'll add this one little one more thing here, is that Indiana's guards, Caleb Love and RJ Davis, I think that's the biggest key.
North Carolina's guards. Indiana wanted them to be Indiana's guards. Yeah. They chose North Carolina.
They did. But those two guys, Indiana needs to contain them. If those guys go for 30 points each, that's when you really start to get in trouble. And to put this in kind of Indiana terms, Caleb Love to North Carolina is what Xavier Johnson was to Indiana last season, and that the team kind of went as he went. So when Caleb Love was playing really well, North Carolina was in a good position to win. Same as last season with Xavier Johnson. If he was playing well, you know, Indiana had a really good chance to win. So to me, one of the really big keys to the game is just containing those two guys, not letting them get hot from three. They've struggled efficiency-wise so far this season, and Indiana needs to keep it that way on Wednesday.
Kronik, I think road weariness will be a thing here, based on, you know, the photographing of buses in and around downtown Bloomington today, something that IU fans and Liverpool fans share as an affinity for following buses around to figure out who's on them. It does seem like North Carolina has opted to just fly straight from Portland to, I think, Indianapolis, and I think the buses are going to drive up and get them there and bring them down here. They will have gone out to Portland presumably no later than last Wednesday, because they opened on Thursday. You wouldn't be stunned if they went out earlier than that. They played Thursday, they played Friday, they had Saturday off. As Tyler said, they played the Sunday game, four overtimes against Alabama. Now they're just, I think, going to come straight to Bloomington, it seems like. That's a long time to be on the road. I mean, that's, you know, that starts to feel like a baseball team at the end of a long road stretch, just kind of trying to grind their way to the end. And Tyler brings up Caleb Love and RJ Davis. Between them, the last two games, 21 of 60 from the field. I think anybody who watched the NCAA tournament last year will agree with a lot of Tyler's analysis there, will understand that when those guys, as much as Armando Bacot, like Trace Jackson Davis for Indiana, has a real sort of gravitational pull as the big man and is really, really good at some things in the paint, those two guys are guys that are just real sort of tone setters, game changers, and they don't seem to be playing very well right now. When you stack that onto, again, road weariness, the time change, because they'll have been in Portland for almost a week, which is about how long it takes for your sleep patterns to switch over to it being more normal to be awake on Pacific time and asleep on Pacific time than awake on Eastern time and asleep on Eastern time. And now you're coming back to Eastern time. It's not going to quite be the Maui body clock shock, but it's not going to be that far off of it. It does just feel like North Carolina is coming into this with a lot of disadvantages in terms of how individual players are performing at the moment. We'll talk about Armando Bacot's potential injury a little bit later, how long they've been on the road, the fact that this is going to be, you know, three games or four games in 7 days for them, all of them big games, and this one, the one true road game in front of a tough atmosphere. I mean, listen, this does feel like it's going to be very, very difficult for North Carolina.
Yeah, and I think Indiana fans are all too familiar with exactly what that type of schedule looks like, you know, playing a lot of games in a very, very short turnaround window, and the commute from Bloomington to Portland, Oregon. We saw exactly what the Hoosiers look like against St. Mary's last March. And I do think the schedule and the travel very much played into that. Now, you know, there was a little bit more in Indiana's plate just trying to get, you know, qualified or trying to get an invitation to the tournament last year, where I think emotionally they were probably a little bit more exhausted than perhaps Carolina is going to come to the hall. That said, though, Carolina just faced the largest, I believe I saw earlier today, it was the largest drop in AP rankings in the AP poll era, to go from 1 to 18. So I would imagine emotionally there's some stuff going on between the ears on that bench right now as well, trying to figure out how quickly they have fallen and what they need to do to get back up. So I think that's just a dozen subplots all kind of leading into this Wednesday night's game. You know, the thing that I'm looking at from the Indiana perspective, you know, with basically four marquee non-conference matchups, this is the only home offering in that slate. And, you know, as Woodson said, since the day he stepped foot on campus, you got to protect home court. You absolutely have to. And I know going into the season, most fans, most of the media I've spoken with really felt like 2-2 should be kind of a baseline expectation for that stretch of tougher games here before, or what, I can't say before anymore, because the Big Ten actually starts before we go to the desert and we go to Lawrence, Kansas. But nonetheless, I think it's imperative that you capitalize on home court advantage as sparsely as you're going to see it here in this non-conference portion of it. And that triggers me to some regard, simply because we've seen so many times in recent past in the non-conference session where, you know, teams that maybe come in looking like they're struggling to figure some things out, all of a sudden figure it out. You know, as Tyler is mentioning, that backcourt, it very much has the potential to light you up. It very much doesn't look like they're on the same page right now. But that's, you've got to respect that firepower that Carolina is going to bring. And, you've really got to leverage that home crowd, because this is going to be the first true road game, North Carolina's faced. I know Portland was semi away. It wasn't their home arena. But nevertheless, they have not experienced anything thus far, like they're about ready to walk into at Assembly Hall on Wednesday. This is going to be, you know, the one chance for the fans to really just open it up and let them hear it. And I know people have been circling this date on the calendar since it was announced. The buzz is still palpable, a little bit diminished from where it was last week when Carolina was still sitting number one. But this is going to be, you know, by all expectation, this is going to be one of those special nights in Assembly Hall where you truly feel the place turned all the way up.
Tyler, I want to dig into the matchup, and then we will kind of circle back to kind of maybe what the intangibles, what it means, and where the pressure lies at the end. To give people a snapshot, North Carolina is currently 12th, and I'm reading from their KenPom page, in adjusted offensive efficiency, 47th, and adjusted defensive efficiency. There are a couple things they do very, very poorly. They don't turn opponents over. That's not a huge concern, I think, from Indiana's perspective, insofar as Indiana is not a particularly turnover-prone team anyway. They do struggle to defend the three. They struggle to shoot the three. They're hitting less than 31% of threes. Opponents are making 35.6% of threes, which is a very bad number. They're surprisingly not, you know, and again, we'll talk about Bacot in a minute. Maybe this has a little bit to do with his injury. They're pretty middle of the road rebounding the ball, and they're actually they've had some trouble at times keeping opponents off the offensive glass. They're 58th in the country in opponent two-point percentage. But in the same breath, you look at a couple of their last couple three games, you know, Portland went 16 of 26. They were very good against Alabama. Alabama was only 21 of 52, but they let Alabama hit 16 threes. In total, across three games out there, they allowed 37 threes in three games. This is, I would imagine, the best front court they're going to face. Or at least they're going to have faced to this point. So I think Indiana is going to be able to stress those rebounding numbers a little bit more. They're going to be able to test how good North Carolina really is protecting the rim and stopping teams from shooting twos. And then that could potentially, if Indiana can find some holes, open up the opportunity maybe for Indiana to hit some threes in this game. On the other hand, as both of you mentioned, you got RJ Davis, you got Caleb Love, you know what those guys can do. Pete Nance can hit threes on you. Leaky Black can hit some threes on you. Armando Bacot, if he's playing, he's Armando Bacot. We know what he's capable of. And there are, you know, still a handful of things, particularly North Carolina gets to the free throw line. They're 24th in the country in free throw rate, and they are 72nd in the country, hitting 75% of their free throws. So to give people, that's kind of a snapshot. There are ways that it feels like Indiana can hurt this team. There are things North Carolina does well that I don't think necessarily will be big problems for Indiana, but there are some little bits and pieces here where, you know, for example, this may be the best front court Indiana's faced, especially if Bacot is full go. This is a team that's going to challenge Indiana's ability to switch. When you talk about Pete Nance and his ability to knock down threes, and are you going to switch all your screens on Davis and Love? Are you really going to be comfortable with bigs guarding RJ Davis? Are you really going to be comfortable, you know, where do you go for wing defense against Caleb Love? There are some ways Indiana's going to get stressed in this game as well.
I will say I do like, from Indiana's offensive perspective, I do like the matchups. I think Trace Jackson Davis and Armando Bacot's going to be, you know, assuming Armando Bacot plays, that's going to be a really good matchup. I think Armando Bacot is a little bit more of a bruiser than Trace, but I think Trace is much quicker, much more athletic. He has the ability to use kind of that jab step, use the baseline to get around him. It'll be interesting to see how he holds up defensively on Armando, because we saw in the Purdue game, the one at Assembly last season, how quickly Trace got in foul trouble trying to guard Edie. And, you know, Armando isn't Edie, but it's still a similar kind of bruising style. I do like the matchups that, like I said, I like the matchups Indiana has, because Leaky Black is Carolina's best defender, one of the best defenders in the nation. I'm interested to see who they stick him on. Do they try to put him on Jalen Hood-Schifino, get length on him? It might also make sense to put him on Xavier Johnson, just because of how dynamic he has been. But let's say they put him on Xavier Johnson. You have RJ Davis, who is extremely an extremely undersized guard. If you have him on Jalen Hood-Schifino, that's going to be a huge matchup problem for North Carolina, given Jalen Hood-Schifino's length and strength and just versatility. So I like the different things that Indiana, the different matchups that they can possibly exploit. You know, I think, whoever's going to be guarded by Leaky Black, you know, I think there's other options that are going to be open because of that. So, and the other thing I'll add to, which I think a way that Indiana can exploit North Carolina, is their depth. You know, we've seen Indiana be able to come in waves this season with that second unit, and then with either Jalen Hood-Schifino or Xavier Johnson. And one of my issues with Hubert Davis, and obviously he's still a young coach and everything, but he's kind of the anti-Mike Woodson in that he doesn't give the guys on the bench a chance. He sticks with his very short rotation, and he does not even go deep at this point in the season. I think, you know, last season, UNC's starting five was known as the Iron Five, but it wasn't as much because they didn't have the guys. Hubert just didn't really give them a chance. And I've already seen that some this season where they've had guys that have showed flashes and they're just not really getting minutes. So you're looking at a Carolina team on top of everything we've talked about, the three games in 4 days in Portland, then playing quadruple overtime, the travel. Now you're looking at a team that realistically might go 7-8 deep playing major minutes. So I think that's where you look at possibly tired legs, another way that, you know, Indiana's depth might be able to wear down North Carolina.
Yeah, Chronic, the depth is something I'm curious about with this game. I wrote something after Indiana's game against Jackson State on Friday, the last time they played, where I basically said, you know, we have this bench that's looked really good in a lot of these bad games. It didn't look quite as good outside Malik Renew in the Xavier game. You know, which is the sample size to trust more, 40 minutes against a good Big East team on the road, or the other five games against bad teams? But that's more games. That's, you know, that's just a much larger sort of picture. And then basically the question I asked was, is the idea that Indiana is going to legitimately go 8-9 deep with difference makers to varying degrees? You know, some of them will be bigger difference makers than others, but guys that can, for example, give you on any given night what Tamar Bates gave you the other day against Jackson State, 22 points, or even just what Malik Renew gives you at Xavier, 12.6 rebounds, quality minutes in the second half down the stretch. Can the bench really be that, you know, kind of all season long? You've now got a situation where if you look at North Carolina, they only played seven guys against Portland, and the two guys that came off the bench played 20 minutes combined. In the Iowa State game, they only played eight players total, and only seven of them played double-digit minutes. Even in the Alabama game, which went to four overtimes, only two bench players played more than 7 minutes. Buff Johnson played 48 minutes off the bench in that game. DeMarco Dunn played 15. After that, Seth Trimble, Dontrez Styles, Justin McCoy, and Will Shaver combined for 10 minutes in a four overtime game. And, you know, I think when people think about depth with a bench, they tend to think about just sort of the idea of, you know, are your bench players better than their bench players? This is going to be, I think, the challenge is much more as Indiana goes to its bench. Can the bench keep stressing that what is essentially a core, you know, 5, 6, maybe 7 for Hubert Davis, unless he changes tack, such that, you know, either the starters wear him down, the bench hits him, or the starters wear him down, the bench wears him down. And then when the starters roll back in, Indiana's a lot better closing halves because the guys on the floor just have just been worn down by sheer weight of numbers across the course of the game.
I think we're going to probably learn quite a bit more about how Woodson feels about his depth. You know, looking at the Xavier game, he went 9 deep with everybody but Geronimo in double digit minutes. Assuming that everybody's available for him. I know Galloway looks like he's going to be evaluated tomorrow, but it sounds like he's going to be greenlit. I think that's absolutely one of the advantages Indiana's going to hold in this game, because so far, honestly, he's relied pretty heavily on that bench, not so much against Jackson State, but in almost all the games prior to that, to really get Indiana dialed in where they need to be when the starters come out and, you know, for whatever reason, don't quite have it firing on all cylinders. The bench has been pretty effective at getting them locked in on defense, and just getting the thing rolling for when the starters come back. So I think it's going to be real curious if he, you know, does he play 9? Does he shorten it up a little bit? Because this is very much a trust thing. As Tyler was discussing with what Hubert's going through right now, we saw it last year with Woody's rotations and the way the groups that he would sub in and the combinations he was willing to try. So it's understandable. But I think this gives you a good mile marker in year two. How's Woodson feel about his bench? How's Woodson feel about his combinations right now? Because with the fatigue that they're likely dealing with from the travel and everything we just discussed, I think that's absolutely an opportunity for Indiana to exploit, especially if you can tell those guys, look, you know, this is the toughest opponents you're going to face. You got to throw everything and then some at them defensively. The offense is going to roll, but we really have to make our stand on the defensive end and know that when you're gassed, we got somebody, we have the depth, we have the talent that can come in behind you, and there's not going to be that big of a drop off. So I'm really curious to see how deep Woodson goes at this point, you know, as we're about ready to wrap up November, because that's very much something that I think Indiana is going to hold a strong advantage in.
The other storyline here, Tyler, is Trace Jackson Davis versus Armando Bacot. That's been a storyline since, frankly, before this game was announced. I think there was some playful social media when they both confirmed they weren't going to the draft of like, oh, you know, let's make this game happen. Let's make this the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Obviously, this is the last. If you did not see it, this is the last iteration of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It is going the way of the dinosaur because essentially the Big Ten and ESPN, which organizes the annual series, are going their separate ways after this year from a media rights perspective.
It's going the way of the Crossroads Classic.
Yes. Armando Bacot has a right ankle injury. I imagine that makes North Carolina fans shudder. He told reporters he had, quote, sharp pains in his right ankle after Sunday's loss to Alabama. He said he's going to do everything he could to play Wednesday against UNC. We've seen Trace Jackson Davis dealing with the thumb sprain, possibly also maybe something in his back. It's not really clear. Mike Woodson wouldn't get specific, but did say that he's been hobbled. He hasn't practiced a ton and that he was going to need all that time between Jackson State on Friday afternoon and UNC on Wednesday night to get right again, to get healthy. That was the billing for this game, was Trace versus Bacot, two All-American bigs, two guys that, you know, maybe could have gone pro, decided to come back, get NIL dollars, lead their teams for one more season, and maybe, you know, NCAA tournament glory, all that. Now we're wondering how full strength those two are going to be.
I will say that, you know, given the injuries, and one you didn't mention was that Leaky Black turned his ankle in the Alabama game. He did come back to play the rest of that game, so I'm not really sure what the concern level is there, but you know, just with all the injuries, everything that we've discussed, I will say this about North Carolina is that a lot of the guys on this North Carolina team were the ones that went into Cameron Indoor and beat Duke in Coach K's last home game. Then they went to the Final Four and then went to the Final Four as an 8 seed and beat Coach K in what ended up being his last game of his coaching career, and then they lose in the national championship game. But this team has dealt with adversity. They know how to win. I wouldn't count them out. You know, I said I would be surprised if they win, if UNC wins, but I also just wouldn't count them out because they are a group that has dealt with adversity and has overcome it.
That kind of brings us back full circle to something I think it was you brought up, Chronic, and we'll close with this tonight. The pressure, you know, to some extent, I think Indiana was always going to be a favorite for this game, maybe a narrow one, but I think even before the UNC's Portland trip, you'd have made Indiana the favorite. So to some extent, the pressure was always going to be on them. It feels like it is much more so now in terms of it seems like the matchups tend to favor Indiana. You know, everyone's going to be asking. I'm sure the broadcast is going to bring up how road weary North Carolina is. If Trace Jackson Davis doesn't play, it's a loss for Indiana. But I would argue that at least on paper, Indiana's got more bodies that can fill in for Jackson Davis. Or if Jackson Davis is even hobbled, if he's not quite as effective or he can't play quite as much, I would argue Indiana's got more behind him that can go count on than North Carolina does with Armando Bacot, just because of how good he is at certain things, particularly in the rebound game. It's a home game at Assembly Hall. It's the last ACC Big Ten Challenge. It's a chance for Indiana to, as you said, kind of get, not that I think Indiana will think this way, but to kind of, you know, complete the bare minimum expectation around this non-conference schedule to get those first two on the board, Xavier and UNC. So Arizona and Kansas almost kind of become free hits. My point is, all the pressure is, it feels like it's going to be a game where the pressure is going to be on Indiana to make the game. I don't know what the line is. I'll look it up while we're talking, or at least what.
Not been published. Pomeroy has it at 6.
Okay. Pomeroy's got it at 6. I'm just checking the ESPN app just to see if you've missed something. No, ESPN's not put it out there yet either. I imagine people somewhere are emailing people trying to get what information they can about Trace Jackson Davis and Armando Bacot before they commit to anything. 6 points isn't a galloping advantage, but it does feel like this is a game where the pressure's on Indiana. Indiana doesn't get to sneak up here. Indiana doesn't get to be the hunter, I guess is my point. And maybe they did a week ago, and whatever UNC's shortcomings, they did a week ago when UNC was number one overall. Now we've, you know, UNC's tasted its own blood. It can come into this game maybe feeling like, hey, let's just play loose and free and see what happens, because if we lose, we lose. It does feel like the pressure's on Indiana a little bit here. And Indiana needs to be prepared for a world where UNC finds some fight. We got about a minute left, where UNC finds some fight and Indiana has to basically grind it out and just dig their way through, maybe close this game in the last 4 minutes.
Despite the performance, despite how shaky they've kind of looked at times this offseason, in the early part of the season, I would be shocked if you don't see the best basketball that Carolina's played this year on Wednesday in Assembly Hall, simply because this is going to be the biggest event for them. They've got everything on their back. They've got nothing to lose at this point. If you're Indiana, you know you got to defend home court. You don't want to lose to a team that's just dropped everything on their way to get to you. You don't want to see that top 10 ranking go away. And I know that doesn't matter, but let's be honest, there's a reason everybody's sharing the graphic right now, because it matters enough. So the one thing I can be absolutely certain of, though, it's going to be electric. It's going to be one of those special nights in the hall. And I expect we're going to see some pretty good basketball. At least that's what my hope is.
We'll leave it there. He's Tyler Tackman. He's Chronic Hoosier. This has been Mind Your Banners. I promised you heavy hitters. I got you heavy hitters. Thanks for listening. We'll see you Wednesday night.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.